Podtacular, episode 357, post-PAX update for March 28th, 2013. Hello, everyone. Welcome to Podtacular, the unofficial Halo Universe podcast. I'm your host, Dust Storm.
And I'm your other host, Brent Gamer.
And we are back from PAX, or at least I'm back from PAX. Brent was at home and unfortunately did not get to do the podcast with him last week just because of time conflicts and schedules being crazy and me being in Boston away from my normal location. So we are back together. Hopefully this podcast will be a little bit more smooth sailing than the last one. I don't know if you got a chance to listen to the last one, Brent, but it was I think I held the fort down okay, but it definitely was awkward doing it alone.
Yeah, podcasts are always awkward alone. I've tried that once and I didn't even post it. It was that bad.
Yeah, there was actually one podcast way back in Podtacular's early years. I actually used to listen to that podcast as well as this one. It was called Sonic 64. And believe it or not, it was a Halo podcast. And it was mostly geared towards Halo PC, not necessarily the Halo on the Xbox. And it went for a good while before he decided to shut down. And he actually did it alone, and he did a very good job. And I'm excited to see him go when he honestly left, because he had a great podcast next to Podtacular. It was very well produced, and doing it by himself and being able to fill a 40-50 minute time frame was just fantastic. I really need to go and find that podcast and listen to some of those older shows, because it was just really cool. But we're back. I have my dynamic duo buddy over there, so we are going to rock the house hopefully tonight.
Yep.
So to start things off, I want to get your opinion, Brent, on some of the stuff that you saw coming from PAX East. How much attention did you pay to stuff like that came out of the panel, that came out of the people reviewing the map pack? What's your take on everything that you heard from PAX East?
I saw a little bit of the panel from PAX East, the multiplayer panel for Halo. I saw the Forge Island stuff, and I saw a little bit of the castle stuff. Mostly just a picture of you taking on BS Angel. That was pretty great.
Oh,
I think Goose Cheka took that picture and then posted it on Twitter that night.
Oh,
yeah.
I don't remember. Which picture was that?
I mean, you were sitting on a couch with her.
Right. So. I remember the situation. I just don't remember what the poses were.
Yeah. So.
Oh, boy. That's going to haunt me for a while.
Oh, man. Right. Yeah. It's an awesome picture. It's not like it's something that's going to haunt you. It's great. I mean, I would put it on the Podtacular front page if I were you.
Put it in the chat and I'll click on it.
All right. I'll find it. But yeah, other than that, I didn't see a lot of the castle stuff. I saw all the IGN castle stuff, the walkthrough.
Their walkthrough with the dev team from Certain Affinity.
Yeah, the Certain Affinity team needs to take a public speaking class or something. Because I'm not saying they did a bad job. They did a great job. I'm just saying whoever was speaking then, like, they were boring as hell. They didn't seem really enthusiastic about the maps, even though they've probably been working on them for months. And, like, they're obviously less enthusiastic than I am. But
you just have no appreciation for it, don't you? That's your problem.
I just hate it. I have no appreciation for functional symmetry or whatever.
No, I agree with you. The commentary, I mean, it was informative, but it definitely was kind of just out. It kind of wants you to put you to sleep sometimes.
Yeah. I mean, it was okay.
Very monotonous.
I like once somebody there yelling like, yeah, teabag them. Ooh, baby. Like, you know, give me some action, you know, happening on those maps.
Right.
I posted a thread about the castle maps on the Podtacular forum. So if you're listening to this, go check out that thread. It's called Castle Halostein. I kind of give a summary of each map, you know, the pros and the cons for each. And so just go check that out. But other than that, I really didn't see that much from PAX.
Okay.
I mostly just watched for pictures of you doing crazy stuff up there.
Did you see me in the recap videos? I was actually in both of them.
No, I didn't see those.
I was featured in the first one, actually. And then the second one, that was actually in the background shot where B.S. Angel was talking. Yeah. So you have to watch those after the show. And I'll play those at the end of the show, too, for you guys that haven't seen them. As far as the rest of the panel, did you hear about the skill rank, the competitive skill rank?
Yeah. I still don't know what to think. I think that ranks should show up in-game, you know?
Yeah, me too. I think it's, at this point, just one of those things where there's a technical limitation with how they built the game where they just can't do that. And they already have the rank there for the Spartan rank. You're 1 to 130. So I think if they were to... I mean, there's definitely space on that card because, I mean, everyone knows that the interface from that is... There's just so much room and unused space on it that... I've heard some complaints where people are they're just kind of baffled by how much unused space there is on the interface. While there is space there, I think that just technically with how they coded the interface that it just won't work. And that's why they're having to resort to only putting it on the Waypoint Experience because they can readily make those changes without having to do a full code rewrite.
Right. But, you know, it just goes back to the Halo 2 days, you know, when rank meant so much, you know, kind of being
well, up even in Halo 3 as well.
Yeah. And I understand that. I mean, it seemed like it was less important in Halo 3, but I mean, back in the Halo 2 days, like your rank was everything. If you were in the upper 40s, you were a pretty decent player, you know. I mean, if you were absolute 50, there was a good chance you were a booster. But if you were like 47 or 48, you were probably a really, really good player. And there were some legitimate 50s out there, but right. It was just hard to tell.
Yeah. For Halo 2, it was definitely very, very difficult to get to your 50. Was there even a 50?
Yeah.
I'm guessing there were a few, but from what I've heard, just being able to get there was an achievement all in and of itself.
Yeah, I remember legitimate 50s. I think they were legitimate at least. I mean, they played like 50s, you know, but yeah, I think that exists or it existed back in the Halo 2 days. It was just really, really rare.
I mean, you had plenty of 50s in Halo 3.
Yeah.
There were actually people figured out how to kind of boost to get those.
Yeah, 130 so, in Spartan rank is just kind of... You know, everybody's got a 130 now. If they've been playing for any amount of time, they generally have a 130.
I'm not quite there. I'm actually a 125, so I'm very, very close. I'm not quite there yet, but I am close.
I guess I just say that because I was playing with a Halo fan for life today, and all of his friends had 130, and it made me feel inferior. Yeah. I've got like a 198 right now.
If you've played the... I mean, at this point, I don't think it really matters because you can actually get there very, very quickly. And of course, the Spartan rank is not really indicative of what your player skill is. It just shows you how long you've been playing. And because you can even get credits for Spartan Ops. And actually, Spartan Ops is the quickest way to get credits, which is why I think Halo Fan for Life, I mean, no offense to him, it's definitely a legitimate way to do it. But that's why some people can get up there so freaking quickly, is because Spartan Ops, if you go into matchmaking, that's actually the quickest way to get credits.
Yeah, you get about 8,000 a match in Spartan Ops. And that's without commendations, so...
Yeah, and compared to something in matchmaking with war games, where you would actually get somewhere around 3,000. And you're spending, depending on what mission you're playing, you're taking the same amount of time to play that mission as you're doing a regular matchmaking game. Sometimes a little bit longer, but most of the time it's very close to the same amount of time, unless you're in a game and you just wreck the other team. But as far as credit-wise and wanting to get your experience up to Spartan rank 30, then Spartan Ops is definitely the way to go.
Oh yeah. I mean, that's how I got so high in my rank. I mean, at least at first, in those first like 4 months, I had the double XP from Mountain Dew. I'd go and buy the 24 packs back when I used to work at a supermarket.
Uh-huh.
Got a discount. And then I just kind of quit playing, but you know, I still got up to like 80 by the time most people were at like 30. 40. Yeah. So, I mean,
well, the other thing in terms of experience is you actually can get those weekly challenges. And right now, those are anywhere from 10,000 credits to 40,000 credits per challenge for Spartan Ops, where the ones for war games are like 1,000, maybe up to 5,000 in some cases for the dailies. And then the weeklies are kind of up there, but it takes a lot longer to get those War Games weekly than it does the Spartan Ops ones, because the Spartan Ops ones, most of the time you can get them done in two or three playthroughs, and that's, what, 30 minutes?
Yeah.
Where the War Games weeklies take at least, like, if you're playing a lot of Halo, you can get it done in one day, but it takes a good half to maybe three quarters of a full day of playing, so maybe 4 to 6 hours.
Oh, yeah. I mean, depending
on the challenge, of course.
Yeah. Have they specified if the CSR is going to have an influence on who you match up with? I mean, I would think it would, but...
I don't know, actually. I don't know if that's a question that's asked in the bulletin either. I didn't consider looking for that question specifically.
It just seems like that would be like the best way to match people up with other people. Because at the time, like, anybody could be a Spartan rank 130, which is just from, you know, playing Spartan Ops and having no War Games experience whatsoever. I mean, you could theoretically hit 130 pretty fast just playing Spartan Ops exclusively. But the right. CSR seems like a much more efficient and effective way to match people up with other people who are good at War Games.
So there's currently a system in place under Halo that is supposed to kind of go ahead and match you up based on skill. Like, that system is there for Halo 4. Whether or not people think it's there, it is one thing, but it does actually exist in the game. A lot of people kind of complain about that doesn't exactly do the best, but it hasn't. There's been cases in all the Halo games where that matching system hasn't always worked out the best. As far as the whole matching up based on your CSR rank, it wouldn't surprise me if they did it that way. I don't know if the CSR is going to replace that system that's currently in place or if it's going to complement that. So we'll have to see.
Right.
So we also had the title update stuff. So fixing, so the red X is, or it's not red X, but the X is back. So what do you think about that?
Having, I mean, that X, it should have been there originally to begin with, you know, I mean. I'm glad they're bringing it in. I mean, that means they're listening to the Halo community. They know what we want, but why would you take it out in the first place?
Yeah, I don't know. That was one of those things, one of those little things of Halo that has kind of become a staple. And while you may not think much of it to begin with, once you take it away, it becomes a very big deal.
Yeah. I think we were referencing the song, "You Don't Know What You Got Till It's Gone."
Yep.
Back when we were talking about it in one of our post-podcast conversations.
I actually think it was the last podcast where we were actually waiting for the bulletin to come out.
Yeah.
And so, no joke, literally 30 minutes after we got off, the bulletin got posted. 30 minutes.
Yeah. We should have just waited 30 minutes. And then
I know,
be
we
able
should
to...
have just waited 30 freaking minutes.
Oh, man. But.
But anyways.
Yeah.
At least the podcast got done. It got out there. So I hope everyone enjoyed it who listened to it. What else was released? You already said Forge Island. We talked about the castle map packs already. So I guess quick question for you. From the maps that you saw, from I guess what little footage you may have seen, what's your favorite map pre-map release so far?
Probably Outcast. If I had to pick,
so that's
one.
My favorite at the moment.
What do you really like about it? Like, kind of explain it. I haven't played it yet, obviously, but...
So, just from the many different pathways that you get, there's a lot of open areas, but it's a lot of closed areas too. And I think one of the other things I like about it is there's no clear shot from one base to the other, where you have a lot of these other maps that, given a certain position, you always have kind of this clear shot all the way across the map, where this one... It's definitely a lot more sectioned off. There's a lot more pathways to kind of run away from fire. And it's just a very complex, dynamic map that just, I don't know, there's something about how that layout works and just seeing that kind of natural formation take a big make a big impact on gameplay for Halo. And it kind of redefines that whole capture the flag mentality as well. I was talking with a couple of people who were there at the event some of the folks, I actually think I talked about this a little bit on the Ready Up Live podcast that we did two episodes ago, and just talked about how these maps have changed the game for big team. It's very small changes, and just that's just because of how the map is laid out, that it's now kind of had a different spin on it of what you think of kind of classic big team CTF.
Right. I can see that. I mean, just in the layout, but I can definitely
Outcast
see.
Just has that, I don't know, there's something about the feel and being able to kind of weave in and out of these cavernous areas and kind of sneak around trying to get to the flag. And just, I don't know, it's something about how the game flows on that map that just, it tickles my Halo funny bone.
Right. Well, also that sand, you know. I love that sand.
Yeah.
More maps need to have sand on them. I don't know why. I just really enjoyed the arc on Halo 3, I guess.
And Sand Trap was pretty cool.
Yeah, that map was pretty cool.
Yeah. As far as like the most visual appealing, I would say Perdition, just because it has that city feel. I don't think we've had a city map? We haven't had a city map.
No.
In Halo 4 yet. So this I really like seeing this one come out of there.
Yeah. If you like Headlong or Turf, like Perdition's for you.
Yep.
Yep.
Skyline was a city map. Yeah, that's true. It was a city map. But the Perdition definitely has more of that classic city map where it's not that at nighttime kind of place. And you actually have streets and you have certain kind of show off areas where Skyline really isn't that way.
More of the ODST style civilian atmosphere.
Right.
Yeah.
It's a little bit more of a open space, and if you think about it, to back to Headlong, Turf, and District from Halo 2 Vista, there were mostly places where, yeah, you could walk around, but there were also vehicle elements to it where it seemed like there were streets that you could drive on, and that's why I think Perdition has that more kind of city feel, and Skyline definitely does have those textures. It is technically a city map, but Perdition has more of that classic city Halo feel than Skyline does, in my opinion.
Yeah. It also has trucks to frag, so.
True.
Yes.
And of course, this isn't to say that Daybreak is a horrible map, but it's definitely my least favorite out of the three at the moment. Now, that may change when the maps finally come out and I have a lot more time to play with them and have a week to play them instead of just kind of a day. And that also may be slightly tainted by the fact that when we got in, the place I sat down was playing Outcast, and I basically played that map for 2 hours straight. So my opinions might be slightly tainted because of that. I did get to play all the maps, but that was the one I played the most. So that might be why at the moment it's my favorite. So I just need to wait till the maps come out and I can get a chance to play every one of them with an equal amount of time and then kind of get my true feelings for the maps.
Yeah, I can see that. I have one question about Daybreak.
Uh-huh.
Like, does the Banshee kind of ruin that map, or does the plasma pistol like render it useless?
So they even asked, was it asked during the panel? It wasn't asked, but Tom Potter, who's the representative from Certain Affinity, who talked to the maps at the panel, went into a little detail about them debating whether or not to add the Banshee or not, and they finally did. Personally, just from the few games I played, I think it kind of breaks the map a little bit. I mean, you do have those plasma pistols that you can pull out of your back pocket and zap the Banshee, but I personally think on this map the Banshee is too much. I honestly think it should have been left out.
Too mobile on a map that's already pretty small.
Yeah, and so it's supposed to be a bigger size map, and it definitely is from an actual size perspective bigger, but you have to look at the main play space that people use, and it's kind of that middle corridor between the two bases. Well, it's not really a corridor, it's split by a ridge, but that center area between those two bases kind of has that Battle Creek or Beaver Creek Battle Canyon type feel to it. But you don't really have many people going to the extreme edges where the Banshee spawns and the Rocket spawns unless they know those two things are over there. Sometimes you'll get people that are running through those areas, but it's usually very close to the centerpieces, just kind of around the rock pillars that are kind of sticking down there anyways. So there's a good maybe 30% of the map that is not regularly used. So even though the map is big in size, the play space and the effective play area of the map is actually smaller. So I personally think the Banshee's kind of a game breaker on this map.
Yeah.
And maybe that was just with the people that were playing there, because most of the people that were playing at the Unveiled event, I knew them. And everyone that is kind of a community leader has a certain kind of play style to them. And it's kind of more of a top tier, in my opinion, for all those leaders. I mean, their skill ranges are definitely everywhere. I mean, when Bravo was playing with us, he completely wrecked what the other team that he was against. But there's a certain kind of play style where I think a lot of these community leaders really kind of adhere to. And it's just a smart way of playing Halo. And I think maybe when we see some other people get into the mix of playing the maps, so when it actually hits its reach for everybody, we may see some of those play styles kind of dissolve out, and we'll see more of a general gameplay that may change. So, of course, these are all kind of first opinions, and we won't really get a full opinion until it's out to everybody and see how the map really flows for everyone. But, again, I think the Banshee's a little bit overkill.
Yeah. I imagine that if it's too overpowered, they'll eventually just take it out. Like, you won't see it at all.
Right.
Kind of
yeah,
like
they
the
can
Banshee
do that.
Was on certain Halo 2 maps.
Ascension?
Yeah, I think they took it out of Ascension first, and then it was Containment or Headlong first. I think they eventually just took it out of both of those maps. I don't remember if they ever took the Banshees off of Waterworks, because that was kind of an important part of that map as far as the gameplay flow.
Yeah, I don't think you would, because you already had the Wraiths and the Scorpion tanks there. It was pretty balanced as it was. That's one thing I miss from this game a lot, is Scorpion tanks. And the reason I asked this question to somebody, I think it might have been Tom Potter who I asked this question to, but I asked why we don't see many tanks, because there's only one map, I think, that currently has a Scorpion tank on it, and that's Exile. And we don't see a Scorpion tank on any other map that has been built in by default, where we used to see it plenty of times on past Halo games. And it's just like their excuse is that it doesn't balance out with the game. And it's like, it's not necessarily supposed to balance out, because it's supposed to be a power weapon, a power vehicle. So I really want to see the tank put back in some more matchmaking maps that is not necessarily just big team.
Right. Not necessarily just Forge Island maps.
Yeah.
I can imagine that the Scorpion will make a big comeback on Forge Island maps. I'm just saying. That's my...
Yeah. Yeah.
It's kind of my big prediction.
But I want to see them in the regular game map. I don't think it has to be in a Forge map in order to be used.
Well, I think I said back when the Majestic map pack came out that I wanted a Wraith on Skyline. Just somewhere. Like, it can't even move. It can just fire. Like,
you
towards the center of the map or something. I don't know.
You can't even forge a Wraith on Skyline, so yeah. I just miss seeing that vehicle in the game. I mean, yeah, it's technically there, but I miss seeing it in regular matchmaking.
Yeah. It was such an important part of Halo 2 that I think people just really, really missed it in Halo 3. But, I mean, it still showed up in Halo 3, and then
Oh, no, it
Halo
showed up in Halo
came.
3 quite often.
Which maps were it on by default?
I know it was on Avalanche.
Yeah.
Trying to think of some of the other maps. It was on...
Sandtrap. Or,
no, because that was the Elephants. That was the Elephants. It was not Sandtrap. I'm trying to think. Actually, was... No, there wasn't a tank on Sandtrap. Halo 3 multiplayer maps. I know Avalanche had one. Crap. I can't remember. It's been so long since I played Halo 3. That's not
it
a good sign.
It showed up on Guardian. It was That's just in the middle sign. And you could like turn
yeah.
it around.
Yeah, that big middle dish. That would have been crazy. So let's see. So assembly. It was on Avalanche. No, not Citadel. Of course. Nope. Rat's Nest. Nope. I guess it wasn't on many maps. Cause it wasn't on Valhalla. Wasn't on Narrows Longshore. Last Result. No. Wow. So it was only on one map in Halo 3.
I couldn't remember using the Scorpion very much in Halo 3. I guess that's why I mentioned it, but I remember in Halo 2 it was on on Headlong for a while on default for defensive team. It was Coagulation. I think there was one on Zanzibar.
So I wonder why I'm missing it more now than I did back in Halo 3 if it was only on one map in Halo 3. It must have been on Sandtrap then.
I think I remember a Scorpion on Sandtrap.
Maybe there was one.
On offensive base.
Because I just thought it was the two elephants. Oh, it could have been based on game type. That's what it was. Yeah. It was based on game type. That's why. So, yeah, Avalanche and Sandbox. Huh. All right. I guess I stand corrected. It makes me wonder why I feel so much stronger about not having a tank in Halo 4 than I did in Halo 3.
Were there any maps on Reach that had the tank?
Yeah, default? So the Shipyard one.
Yeah.
Had it. Halo Reach maps. Hemorrhage.
Yeah.
Had it. Highlands did not have it. Nope. Boardwalk, Boneyard. So it was Boneyard. That was the Shipyard one. Boneyard. Breakpoint had one. Reflection. Nope. Powerhouse. Nope. Highlands. Nope. Spired Swordface. Tempest. Nope. Nope. Pinnacle. Cliffhanger. No, so just the those three. So Breakpoint, Hemorrhage, and Boneyard. So those three maps. That's a pretty good number.
More than Halo 3, apparently.
Yeah, that's strange. Huh. Alright, I guess I stand corrected then. Still, I want to see the Wraith, or not the Wraith, the Scorpion tank be integrated somewhere in there. Cause yeah. It just feels like it's a vehicle that's left out. And I know a lot of people really want to see a UNSC flying vehicle, but it still seems like the tank is just not highlighted for being able to be put in the game.
Here's my prediction. In Halo 5, you will see the UNSC Pelican show up in multiplayer.
That would be sick. It'd be even more sick that if that was the case, we may see a bigger map playable space and maybe see some kind of like air combat, possibly more people per party. So maybe bump up the player count. I mean, we don't know how much more beefier this next Xbox is going to be able to handle games. So who knows?
32 player Halo matches.
Oh, I'm goodness, ready. That would be so much fun.
My body is ready.
Even 24 would be fun. Like, yeah. It wouldn't even have to be. I mean, I've even said 20. Just add two more players per team. I think that would be really cool for some specific maps. I mean, Meltdown and Vortex would definitely be able to benefit from having two more extra people on either team. I don't think there was anything else in the panel that we missed. I mean, we got asked about the tile update, talked about Castle Maps, Forge Island, CSR. I think that was it. There were stats that they unveiled with a few unfortunate jokes that came out of that. But you guys can watch the panel for that. So, yeah, let's go ahead and move on to some questions then. Oh, actually, no, I'll talk about that on the next show. I'll go ahead and mention it anyways. 343 did put out another Sparkcast last Monday, and they were actually talking with Greg Bear and a couple other people who I did not remember off the top of my head, and they talked about some of this background behind Silentium, with it being the last Forerunner book, and they kind of go into some details on kind of the Forerunner culture at the time of him writing the trilogy, and how the Forerunners had to kind of change their society to address the threat of the Flood and humans and all that good stuff. So we'll talk about that a little bit on the next show, as well as there was GDC this week, and there's actually a video posted up from a panel that 343 talked about Fortnite of Dawn with. So we'll watch that, and we'll actually talk about that next week. We may do two shows next week to cover that. So we may do one to cover the podcast and GDC stuff, and then we may do our regularly scheduled podcast. So we will let you guys know about that. But without further ado, let's go on to the Halo Bulletin.
Yes.
So this week, it's just kind of a Q&A from PAX, and there's not any matchmaking updates. There's nothing else. So it's just a Q&A and then screenshots at the very end. So I think what we're just going to do is go ahead and read through the Q&A, pick out a couple questions. I don't think we'll read all of them. We might, depending on how much time these questions take. It might just be straight shooting. It might not take as long. But we're just going to kind of do that for the time being, since that's really the only thing on the update. And then we'll read through submissions, and then we'll wrap up. So the first question that we have here from the Q&A is, are there any plans to further support Halo 4 after the next title update? And Frank's response is, we intend to fully support Halo 4 through matchmaking events and essential fixes and playlist designs for a long time to come. And while there are no announced map packs after Castle releases later this spring, we have some cool ideas about future content and support that we're tinkering with right now. So I have a feeling we may see some more map packs come out later down the line.
Yeah, they want to make money, obviously. And that's an easy way to make some cash, you know, in between games, so.
Yep. So, I figure we just want to shotgun these back and forth, so if you want to take the next one.
All right. Danger Boy says, will multi-team be four teams of three? What game types will be included in the playlist? And Quinn says, multi-team, which launches with the Castle map pack, will consist of six teams of two. A couple of the modes that you can expect at launch are Slayer and Oddball. Who knows, maybe we'll throw SWAT in there as well.
Sweet. And that was from Quinn DeHoyo, the response. He's a multiplayer designer over there. Next one is from Dead Dead Dead. Can we expect to see some universal balance changes applied to the default game settings? Quinn responds, yes, you can expect to see global tweaks to the sandbox, much like the adjustment of the bolt shot in the previous title update and the Warthog's Gauss Cannon in this one.
Man, that Gauss Cannon was just such a pain for so long.
Oh, I loved using the Gauss Cannon. I know it was definitely a pain fighting against it, but it's definitely fun to shoot with it. I do like that they're nerfing down that magnetism.
Yeah.
Because that was a little cheap.
But, I mean, it goes back all the way to Halo 2 when you could go, you know, 35 and 0 in a Gauss Hog on Zanzibar.
Well, there's that one guy that went 105 and 0 on Standoff in Halo 3 with a Gauss Hog.
Gauss Hogs have it going on, you know?
Yeah.
It's basically like having the fastest Spartan laser binary rifle ever on the
back
of a
Warthog.
I guess that's
the one reason why they have the tank on the opposite side of the Gauss Hog, is so those two can balance each other out on Exile.
Yeah. Let's see.
Ninja Woo.
Ninja Woo says, what weapon balancing is being considered right now? And Quinn says, we're constantly keeping an eye on the overall state of the game and its sandbox. We'll let you know more as soon as we can. So they're basically just not answering the question.
There's going to be some questions. Balance. Yeah, there's going to be some questions where they're not going to answer straight up front.
Yeah, secrecy is golden for any game development studio. Yep. But yeah, I mean, they're probably thinking about DMR balance right now. I don't know if they'll do anything about it. They're thinking about bolt shot balance, you know, whether or not their last update actually did enough to kind of stop that from being a major part of Halo 4 multiplayer.
Yeah, it's definitely seemed from at least what I've played to relieve some of it, but it still gets annoying because it's still a one-hit kill from 15 feet away, which is quite large for a weapon that you can spawn with and be an insta-kill. Next question comes from the Kare or something like that. Is the TU weapon manipulation focused solely on damage and rate of fire, or are there more variables that can be changed, such as aim assist, bullet magnetism, bloom, spread, recoil, etc.? Quinn responds, we have several knobs that we can use when it comes to weapon tuning, a few being auto-aim, projectile accuracy, and rate of fire.
So expect the DMR to have possibly more bloom in the future, maybe?
A little
less aim assist?
Yeah, probably a little less aim assist, probably maybe a little bloom. But I honestly, with my Halo games recently, I think I'm getting headshots with the DMR when it's not. Like, I'll literally have my reticle directly on someone's head, and it won't give me a headshot. And I've actually died because I think I hit someone in the head. I go to turn around and reload, and they're not dead, and they actually end up killing me. So I think as far as projectile accuracy for the DMR, please don't touch that, because I'm already having a hard enough time as it is anyways. The auto-aim stuff, the magnetism, I'm fine with you changing that, but the projectile accuracy, please don't change that on the DMR, because it's already hard enough as it is.
So go ahead and read the next one. Sloa says, will players get some of those back-end knobs to jiggle for custom games? And Quinn says, unfortunately, the title update does not allow for weapon tooting in custom games.
Wah, wah. That's no surprise, really. I'm not really surprised at that, actually.
I'm not surprised, but in Halo 5, they really need to focus on custom games a little more, and Forge in general.
Right.
You know, that the Halo community is getting smaller with each and every game, it seems. And at this point, you need to maintain the player base you already have. And how do you do that? You fix Forge and you fix custom games, because, you know, matchmaking's fine, but after a while, you just want to do some crazy stuff in customs. You just want to have fun with your friends, and you don't want to go into matchmaking where you can get matched up with a bunch of, you know, whiny losers or, you know, kids who have way too much time on their hands and, you know, decide they want to be profane while their moms and dads go to the movies or whatever.
Yeah.
That's what custom games are for, because you're just with everybody that you already have on your friends list. You know that most of them are going to be cool. If they're not cool, the party leader will just kick them. You know, I mean, custom games are kind of the heart and soul of the Halo community. They really need to focus on that for the next game if they're not going to fix it in Halo 4.
Yeah, they need to kind of focus on multiplayer in general across the board.
Right.
I think from here on out, we need to kind of pick and choose, because this could actually go on quite a while. So I'm going to take one from Nuclear Taco 42. He writes in, will the weapon tweaking you'll be doing with the new TU affect custom games or only matchmaking? The tweaks will only affect matchmaking. Players can download specific game modes and variants from matchmaking to implement the settings in the custom matches. So similar to what they did in Halo Reach with the title update settings, where you could download those from or save them whenever you do matchmaking, like the Zero Bloom DMR, and then you can use and tweak those settings, and they'll have those custom knob tunings in there.
It's download time.
Yeah.
Go into their file share. Take all of their settings.
So pick another one.
All right. A Runation says, will an option for enabling or disabling Sprint become available with this title update? Quinn says, currently there are no plans to add a custom games option to enable or disable Sprint. We may look into experimenting with that, though, in a game type or playlist at some point.
Cool.
So, you might be able to turn that off eventually, maybe.
We shall see. The next one is from Goobot. He says, how often will you reset CSR? Resetting CSR is something that we aren't taking lightly. When we do reset CSR, we'll be sure to provide ample messaging describing the reasons for doing so. They mentioned in the panel doing certain resets for maybe certain kind of events, and then at certain times just doing resets. And this will kind of help prevent like selling of accounts and other things like that. So, and it's just kind of another refresh to be able to kind of reset and clearly see where you stand up. And maybe you got to a certain rank and then you kind of got stuck there. And then actually being able to clear it out, you may actually be able to get further on in your skill rank, or maybe you'll actually find that you're not as good as you thought you were. So I'll see that as a bad thing. I think a lot of people might get upset about it, but I don't see it as a bad thing.
Right. DeLuca34 says, will there be a second season of Spartan Ops? And Frank says, there is no season 2 of Spartan Ops scheduled at the moment. But rest assured that the story of Crimson, the Infinity, and those characters and events is far from over. So, he's not saying there's a season 2 right now, but there's a season 2 eventually.
So, I actually talked about this with Halo Fan for Life on our latest Spartan Ops episode, and there was an interview with the voice actor behind Spartan Palmer. I don't know what her name is. I don't have it memorized. But there was an interview with her recently, and she was going through recent projects that she's currently working on. One of them was Halo 4. Now, the only reason someone that would be acting as Spartan Palmer would be that they're working on a second season of Spartan Ops. Now, that's purely speculation, but there's a good chance we may see a second season of Spartan Ops.
Well, I mean, there's also a chance that somebody at 343 just really likes Palmer's voice, and they brought her in just to have her say random lines. Like, how does that pineapple taste? It tastes good. Like,
yeah.
I'm just saying, like, there's a season two of Spartan Ops in the works right now. Mm-hmm. They're not saying anything about it because they're not ready yet, but when they're ready, you'll see a teaser trailer or something.
Yeah.
I would suspect we'd get a season two of Spartan Ops around September, and they'll announce
September,
it at
October.
They'll announce it at this year's E3.
I don't know about E3, because I have a feeling E3 is going to be the next box announcement, so I don't think they want to have that overshadowing Spartan Ops announcement. So maybe at San Diego Comic-Con. I can see them doing it there.
It'd be cool if it had its own, like, announcement event. Like, Sarah Palmer, like, crash lands in New York's Times Square. And she's like, I'm here to announce Spartan Ops Season 2.
We shall see. I'm going to take the next question from... Ooh, there's a lot of good Forge ones in here. We may read multiple of the Forge ones. From Pete the Duck. Let's do the one from Pete the Duck. Will the Forge budget be greater on Forge Island than other maps? Response from Kynan Pearson. As you know, there are limitations on the quantity of objects that can be placed due to max object count limitations in light map theory. Or, no, not theory, memory. The budget hasn't been expanded, though there are changes to where the objects are located in the pallets now. Most of the larger pieces from the other pallets and some new larger rocks have been placed into the buildings category. The quantity of buildings objects that can be placed has been increased from 12 to 20. The other category object quantities have stayed the same. Technically, it's a minor increase, though you will still have to manage your object counts just as you did for the original three Halo Forge maps. So really no change to the budget, which is kind of unfortunate.
Yeah.
Because if you make the map this big, you would want to be able to, for people to really kind of explore the space, and it doesn't even sound like you're not going to be able to that much.
Yeah, but...
So that's somewhat disappointing.
I didn't really expect any major Forge improvements after they had put the game out. Because Forge was mainly a certain Infinity thing, from what I understand. The kind of outsourced
Forge. Well,
this is
actually done in-house for 343. This was not a certain Infinity thing.
What, the map or actual Forge
Island,
the mode?
Forge Island was done by 343.
Yeah, but Forge Island still has to work under the confines of the Forge that Certain Affinity made. I'm not saying Certain Affinity did a bad job, but...
Okay, yeah, good point.
I feel like they could have done a little better.
Right.
You know, even though there's a new map coming out, it's not really a new Forge coming out. Like, the mode itself is still the thing that Certain Affinity designed for 343 when they started making Halo 4.
Right.
I like the new map. I like the idea of it, but it still has to work within the confines of a Forge mode that the community is not really... They're happy with it, but they feel like it could have been better, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Moving on. Deception Cobra says, will any previously removed custom game types be added to Halo 4? For example, Assault, Race, Territories, etc.? And Quinn says, there is always a possibility for old favorites to make a return to Halo 4, but we have nothing to announce on that front at this time. That's interesting to me, because he's not just outright denying that they could add those things in. He's saying that they really haven't thought about it yet, but they could add it in possibly in the future. You've been wanting Race for a while now. You've said that on several podcasts.
Yeah, yes, I have.
So I feel like we'll eventually get Race in Halo 4.
I really want to see it. I'm going to take the last question here. So this one comes from Ninja Wu, and he says, will we ever get the option to drop the flag or press X to hold the flag. Response from Quinn, he says, currently there are no plans to add the ability to drop the flag or pick it up manually, but I never say never, so we'll see. So take that for at its word. I don't think we'll see it in matchmaking. Definitely not in matchmaking. Maybe as a custom game option, but it sounds like with how the system is currently designed, I don't really expect to see that change at all. So
I think it'll be in Halo 5.
I think they will bring it back in Halo 5. I think they'll have it as an option in Halo 5. I'm sure there's still some more kind of user community testing that they want to look at, and we may actually get a beta for Halo 5 this time. So we will see kind of what turns out from that. I'm going to go ahead and cut the questions right there. There's plenty of more questions, so definitely go over and read the bulletin. There's lots of other things about Forge, the maps, updates to the introduction of the CSR system, and some other things in there. So definitely go check those out if you have any other questions. Let's read a couple submissions that we got, and then we'll wrap it up for the night. So we have one from CG Studios. He writes, hello, Potacular. NomaKid2 here. Just wanted to say that I love listening to your podcast on a weekly basis. My favorite kinds of podcasts as of late have been the campaign coverage for Halo 4 and any fiction-based episodes. I am very involved with the fiction that the Halo universe has to offer. Me and several other people love Halo so much that we have made our own zombie machinima series called The Infection and are now in the process of making a new series. Anyways, keep the good work, Duststorm and crew. Keep on fragging those trucks. So, thank you, and good luck with your machinima series.
Yes.
Send it on over our way when you have it done.
I was listening to the Giant Bombcast the other day, and Jeff Gerstmann mentioned that he wasn't a fan of machinima, and it made me mad. He's like, people that make machinima, especially in the early versions of machinima, and he was like implying Red versus Blue. He's like, yeah, it was so pompous. You know, it was so presumptuous. Like, it just made me mad. Like, I was like, do you understand the point of machinima is kind of a low budget, like the lowest possible budget ever, because it's essentially just your video game system with a capture card attached to it. And, I mean, you're making videos with that. I mean, especially when Red versus Blue first started coming out, like, nobody had really thought of that in any major capacity at the time. I mean, it was pretty creative, so Jeff Gerstmann needs to get off his high horse as far as that's concerned.
There's just so much with the machinima as well as just showing how creative a community can be as well, where you don't have to be out there having expensive animation software or anything like that, and being able to show some incredible creative talent and actually being able to work within the confines of a system is kind of a challenge in and of itself, because you have to actually work within the system and do things and adjust for things that you may not be able to do, and be able to utilize certain features in such a way that actually conveys a certain idea that you want to get across. So in some ways, machinima is just as much creativity as doing something with freeform animation software.
Well, in Jeff's defense, I don't know if he was exactly talking about Red versus Blue. I mean, he could be talking about other stuff I have no clue of, but
right.
To me, like, the first major machinima series was Red versus Blue. As far as getting the mainstream public's
agreed
attention.
Agreed.
So I think he was talking about Red versus Blue. And I don't want to sound like I hate Jeff Gerstmann. Like, I love him. Like, he's one of my favorite game journalists, or whatever they want to call themselves, game writers. And yeah, it hurt me when I heard him talking about machinima that way. I mean, he's
show me where he hurt you on this doll.
All right. He hurt me here, Dustin. machinima, I can see where somebody might see it self-serving, because they might see machinima as something that's easy to do because you're doing it in a video game, but the truth is machinima is extremely hard. I mean, not extremely hard, but I mean, it's difficult in getting
your shots.
Well,
it takes time.
Yeah, I mean, it takes time, it takes, you know, creative effort, all sorts of stuff to get that stuff going.
It might not be impressive as doing something with animation software and actually kind of building your environments that way, but there's still a certain level of creativity that's to be respected from machinima makers.
Well, and the thing is, too, I mean, Machinima has to work within the confines of the video game that it's working with.
Right.
So they have to get creative in ways that people who are animating freeform don't have to, you know? I mean, if you're working for an animation studio, you get to create what you want to create. You have the tools to make whatever you want to make. But in Machinima, you don't have that same luxury. You know, Red versus Blue used essentially Halo 1 and Halo 2 models within the confines of what was already a pretty confined game in terms of what you could do. I mean, first-person shooters, they seem like they're freeform, but the truth is there's only so much you can do within that game world. There's only so much you can manipulate. The first time we've ever seen a video game really give you the tools to manipulate the world around you is Minecraft. And, I mean, you look at that, and that's even, I mean, that's still rudimentary. I mean, it's blocks on a block-based world. So we're still working towards a truly interactive environment in video games. And first-person shooters are right now the most interactive in that you can point your gun at anything and shoot at it. And some things interact with the gun you're shooting at. But, you know, at some point, video games are going to come to where you are in a first-person environment and you don't have a gun at all. You're interacting with it in other ways. But we haven't gotten there yet. And Machinima is a direct kind of interaction between early first-person shooters, at least in Red vs. Blue's case, and the fact that there was only so much you could do with it. And it was still extremely beloved. I mean, Red vs. Blue got popular for a reason. If it were unfunny, nobody would have liked it. Just because Jeff Gerstmann doesn't find it funny, I think, doesn't mean, you know, a lot of other people really enjoyed Red vs. Blue. So, That's my defense of Machinima.
Okay. You want to read the last one?
Yes. Trip Diesel says, "Hey, Dustin and Brent. You keep mentioning that Halo 4 seems like 343 left out some things that a lot of people would have liked to had. Some things I would have liked to see in Halo 4 are seeing my scope pop up when I'm playing, having a night vision or highlighted mode like Reach or ODST, and being able to see what the unlock requirements are for armor I've unlocked. Could you just tick off a list of the stuff you want to see in the next Halo game? Keep on fragging trucks, Trip Diesel."
I think I touched on this a little bit earlier, in terms of kind of discussing things to add. This discussion was pre-show, talking about some things to add for mission makers, being able to put in character models such as grunts and elites and jackals, and be able to actually kind of play as those characters to make Machinima, be able to edit some of the surroundings in order to stimulate things like weather, time of day, maybe have texture packs for certain maps to where maybe you could take something like Exile, and instead of being green, luscious, canyon-like, it could be dry, desolate, sandy, rocky area, stuff like that. Just tools to kind of benefit or help make machine makers just be able to create so much more content with Halo. That'd be cool to see. We've seen additions to pretty much every successive game, and I just want to see, personally, that be added into the game. Also, there's another feature that I want to see, and that's kind of a spectator or tournament mode. Those are kind of the two big things for me I would like to see in Halo 5. In terms of things they left out, the Red X is definitely one of them. The race game type is a big one for me. A lot of people really miss having a human flying vehicle, so maybe seeing that back in the game would be another good one to include as well. The night vision and highlight mode, I honestly don't think that's missing. I don't think having or missing that in Halo is a detriment. So that's my take on it. What about you, Brent?
Just for Halo 5, they can bring it back in Halo 6. But in Halo 5, I want them to take out the jetpack. Just for one game. Just so I can have one Halo game in the modern era that does not have jetpack in it. Because that completely ruined kind of the momentum of Halo prior to Halo Reach. Because you obviously had to like run up ramps and jump into certain areas instead of jetpacking. So it definitely had a different map structure. and a map flow that none of the modern Halo games have. So just for Halo 5, I wish they'd take out the jetpack, which they won't do. It'll obviously be there, but I mean, if we're just sitting here wishing for stuff, that's what I want. And the ability to toss the flag aside, like get rid of.
Oh, yeah,
the
that needs to be.
And just let me throw the flag away.
So the flagnum works with how the current system is implemented, with you having to pick up the flag and carry it. Now, I think if they add that ability to hold X to pick up the flag and then not be able to drop it, I think that's kind of a good balance between the two options. Because it is kind of difficult to see someone running with the flag and then instantly drop it and shoot with a rocket. That's kind of unfair. I mean, it's not technically unfair because if the feature's there, it's not unfair, but in terms of just kind of a fun aspect and kind of a game from the gameplay's perspective, it's kind of off balance a little bit. So I personally like how they implemented the flag running. There's just those few nuances where if you're actually fighting in and around the flag, you don't want to have to pick up the flag if you are trying to defend somebody. And maybe you're walking right by somebody and you have rockets and you're about to shoot somebody, but instead of shooting those rockets, the person right by you dies, and then you instantly pick up the flag and you're not shooting that rocket anymore. So I do think holding X to pick up the flag is something that needs to be brought back, but not necessarily the ability to drop the flag.
I get what you're saying, but like in that scenario that you were given, like a guy with a rocket being able to drop the flag and then shoot with the rocket, I mean, in prior Halo games, they had to find that rocket launcher. They had to go to a certain place on the map.
Yeah.
And they had to pick it up.
Yeah, there's that
and
too.
That, I mean, that was part of map flow. I mean, you had to go to power weapon spots to pick up a weapon, and, you know, a lot of people were going to those same spots. So there was always a chance that when you went to get that weapon, you know, you were going to find somebody that was unfriendly to you. They were going to fire on you and possibly kill you. You know, if you earned the rocket launcher by either, you know, showing up and killing whoever was trying to get it, or nobody else just took the time to go and pick the rocket launcher up. I mean, you picked up that weapon fair and square. And if you want to drop the flag and fire with it, you know, that's not your team's fault. That's the other team's fault for not picking it up first.
True. That's true. All right. That wraps up this show, guys. Thank you for everyone who came out and listened to us live. Remember, you can catch us every Thursday night at 8:30 p.m. Eastern Time. That's when we do our live shows, recording for the bulletin updates. Now, we do shows that kind of float around a little bit, and those are kind of off the normal time scale of doing Thursdays, and we may actually do one of those next week. So I think tentatively we are going to do an additional one on Tuesday at 8:30 to cover the latest Sparkcast, and then cover what happened at GDC for Halo 4. So I think we'll do a show on that on Tuesday, if that's open for Brent.
Yes, it is.
Okay, cool. So we'll do that one Tuesday, and then we'll have another regularly scheduled one on Thursday next week. So look for those podcasts. Remember, you can check us out on our website, podtacular.com. And if you have a question or want to submit some funny story or anything that you want to talk about Halo-related, feel free to drop us an email at submissions@podtacular.com. Or use the green button on our homepage and use the submission form there. Or call our listener voicemail and leave a message that we can play on the show. And that number is 240-200-HALO. That's 240-200-4256. We actually have two voicemails in the mailbag right now, and we will actually play those on the next show, because there's actually one of them in there that has about 7 or 8 questions, and I need to write those down and get answers for that one before we actually answer it on the show. So we will take care of those voicemails next week. Please follow us on our social networks. That's Twitter, Facebook, YouTube, Twitch. We have a Ustream channel, but we usually only use it for the live broadcasting of the podcast. But we mainly advertise our Twitch channel. So you can follow us. And then whenever we broadcast for game nights, other special podcasts, and if we ever do kind of collaborative stuff and we're live streaming, you will actually get an email notification when we go live. So that's one way to also kind of keep up to date on when we do stuff outside of normal rotations. You can also participate in game nights that we regularly run. We have Monday Night Matchmakings, which happens every Monday at 8:30 p.m. Eastern Time. That's 5:30 p.m. Pacific Time. and that is currently 12:30 UTC, because it's not 5 hours anymore, it's four. So 12:30 GMT time, it's still 1:30 UTC. So you can check us out on Mondays, and you can play with us for the matchmaking update, whatever it is going to be for that week. And like I said, I guess two podcasts ago, or maybe the last podcast, since they're doing the updates to the matchmaking system bi-weekly now, we'll obviously be doing a couple of matchmaking nights where it's just we go into a matchmaking playlist depending on who, how many people we have and what playlist everyone's interested in, and we'll just jump into certain playlists. We also
it's
have
going to be big team battle.
Big team if we battle. Have 16, yeah, it's going to be big team. Unless we split the party. On Wednesdays, we have Wacky Wednesday at the same time. And for that, we'll actually do customs. And last night for like Wacky Wednesdays, we had a special guest appearance from Pete the Duck, who got to who showed off his map Onslaught and actually showed off another little secret project. So if you got to play in that, then you were gifted with that little sneak peek of a project he's working on. And I think he's actually releasing it either tomorrow or the next day after. So you will actually see that up on his website, probably on Waypoint, and then his file share.
It's a giant toilet that Spartans get flushed down, and you have to fight each other while you're going down the pipes.
That would be interesting. So make sure you check out those game nights. And then we have the other event, which is Halo 2 Tuesdays, which happens every second and fourth of every month until Halo 2 finally kicks the can. And that is running Halo 2 Vista, which is on the PC, not doing Halo 2 on the Xbox with X-Link Kai or Xbox Connect. This is on the PC. You can go find a copy probably at Best Buy or Fry's or whatever local electronics store that you have for probably about $15. And if you can't find it there, you can definitely find it online on online stores like Amazon, eBay, and that kind of stuff. So if you want to play with us and get another few more achievements, then definitely pick up a copy. Halo 2 is definitely an easy or a relatively easy 1,000-point achievement obtain other than the matchmaking one. And there's three matchmaking ones that are kind of difficult to get because you actually need numbers to get them. But that's what we're trying to do with this play date for Halo 2 Vistas. So once we get enough people on, we can actually go and do those final achievements. While we do offer the podcast free, we do appreciate any donations that you guys are willing to send our way. If you go to our homepage, there's a donate button on the right-hand side of the website, and that goes straight to PayPal, and you can donate some money over there to help support the site. Right now, everything comes out of my pocket, so anything that you guys are willing to send over would be greatly appreciated. Make sure you check out our two previous PAX-related shows. We had episode 355, where we talked with a few Ready Up Live people who were there at PAX East, and we talked about our Castle map pack experience at the Mad Cats Unveiled event. And then there's episode 356, where we kind of did a cooperative podcast with Griffball Hub to talk about the rest of our PAX experience. So make sure you check out those podcasts and check out their communities as well. That's it for us tonight, guys. Thank you so much for listening, and thank you to you guys on the live stream who came out and listened to us. And if you have not come to one of our live streams, please think about doing so. We would really appreciate to see the numbers kind of jump. That would make us really, really happy. So without further ado, that is it for us tonight. Keep on fragging trucks.
Keep on fragging jetpacks.